I'm the Cookie Crisp guy.
Welcome to Thunder Nerds. I'm Brian Hinton.
I'm Janelle Pizarro.
And I'm Frederick Von Weiss. And thank you for consuming the Thunder Nerds. The conversation with the people behind the technology.
That will.
Hey, everybody. We are live at DevFest 2019. Woo. DevFest Florida. We are in Orlando. Where, Brian?
At the Disney Contemporary Resort. It's magical.
It is magical. We are talking with a bunch of magical speakers today, and we're right now talking with welcome to the show, Michael.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. It's our pleasure, truly. Michael, if we could start off by providing a little bit of context of who you are and what you do.
Okay, I am a software developer. Done a lot of full stack, but mostly focused on Angular and front end right now. I work with the Angular team, Angular Material, and do a little consulting on the side. And I organize some community events like
you do, Florida. Like this one.
Yes.
Ooh.
Yeah. So, what was I know you said you organize it, but what does that entail?
Well, I've organized it for the past 2 years. Prior to this year, I said I was going to speak, and that was it. But different things happened. They needed some help, so I did a bit more. I helped with the website some and some coordination and planning and other stuff, and as well as bringing some hardware that we needed here today, projectors and screens and getting our, some stuff. So
you saved the
did a little bit to help.
You are literally magical. I love it.
So, development. What kind of development are you doing?
Angular JS Material is the main project that I maintain.
Okay.
A lot of our focus is accessibility, performance, and sort of stability. You know, hundreds of thousands of apps built with it, and making API stable, but making changes to, especially around accessibility, where there's apps out there that are built for government and other things where they have accessibility focuses.
How do you really bring attention to accessibility?
Well, my talk to a number of different things, just like some of the screen readers to just some of the basic audit, they can just like, how am I doing? You can use the audit that helps you get a little ways there, but then the next step is they experience what a person with disability would, experience to a point where it's really, you're on this thing. Then what? Like, it doesn't tell you how to interact with it, especially if you're using custom components and you build in some sort of a custom button or something like that. If you're not using like a native button or native input, you've got to implement all the accessibility stuff. So get that. Your screen reader user can get to a part of your app where they're just like, they can't use it. Like, it might be an important search feature in your app, or it might be part where they check out and they put their credit card.
Well, we won't.
And if they can't use it, then you're losing, a lot. And the numbers I showed was about 20% of your possible audience may have some sort of disability. So
for those of us out there maybe that don't know what a screen reader is and how to use it in development, how would you explain that to them?
So there's a couple different types. One is just a screen reader that you kind of tab around with the keyboard and use different hotkeys on the keyboard to navigate. Like, you can just cycle through buttons, or you can cycle through like headers, and it will read back to you the content, and you hear it and you interact using the keyboard. That's like your desktop screen reader, your laptop screen reader. But now with mobile phones and tablets being widespread, people want and need to use those, so there's touch screen readers. And I covered that a little bit, which I didn't get a demo it, but you move your finger around to discover. So you basically just act like you're blind, and you're moving your finger, and it's like you're on a button, you're on the delete button, you're on the create button, and then you can interact with it. But then certain interactions, like closing a dialogue and things like that, you actually do a gesture. And for people that see, you would think everything I'm going to interact with, there's going to be a button. Where's the button to click? But for gestures, there's nothing. You just have to know it. You have to learn it.
Yeah.
And so you have to know the gesture to do. So there's a bigger learning curve with the touch screen readers than the keyboard ones.
Yeah, I've been exploring a little bit in accessibility since, I can't remember her name though, the what was that one app, that the content blocker app, they're Ireland.
Oh, yeah. I can't think of it right off the top of my head.
We had a guest on. We'll link it again, I guess. And she's big into accessibility, and I've been really diving into it and looking at how people interact with computers in the different ways. Like even a clicker, they have like a single button. It's called switch, I believe, where they just push and it like navigates to key points within the app, and how annoying it can actually be, how frustrating it must be for users to have to just type something because of how slow it steps through each key. How
Laura called that.
Yeah,
Laura called that. That's right. Yeah. And it's a really interesting field, and I'm glad it's starting to really get enough attention to, you know, we're seeing all these talks and people that really care about it.
And we're getting a lot more disabled people into development.
Yes.
They're actually becoming developers, successful developers. Mm-hmm. I got a pull request just to call a guy on the Mozilla team.
Yeah.
He's blind.
Oh, wow.
He sent me a pull request because an app that he used AngularJS material and a certain nav bar or item like that, he couldn't interact with the keyboard.
Oh, that's awesome.
And so he's like, I want to use this app. So he actually tracked down the library. Uh-huh. He made a pull request. I worked with him like for the code review and to, you know, iterate, put some tests in. And we got it merged and fixed and released. And actually he also CC'd me with the CEO of that company.
Oh, that's,
and they're like, oh, yeah, we're going to update our AngularJS materials.
That's
so
amazing.
Yeah, that just, is really awesome.
Just from the point that you touch people's lives like that just is.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, because it literally is a brick wall.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He could not use the app.
Yeah, it's just crazy that not enough people really think about that. I love what Microsoft did, too. I don't know if any of you have seen the Xbox controller they released.
Yeah.
No, the packaging itself is accessible and easy to open. Mm-hmm. Then the whole controller is basically there's a giant touchpad and a few other like little buttons here. But then on the back is just an array of like headphone jack type ports. So it's like 3.5 millimeter. And then you can just plug various things into it, like a switch, for instance, and that like just a little thing that could be nudged by the cheek, and it actually would correspond to like pressing the X button.
Oh, wow.
And it's just like, that's amazing. Like that Microsoft released a product like that. And that there are companies out there that are like thinking about that.
Yeah, that commercial is beautiful too.
Oh yeah, yes.
It makes me cry.
Oh yeah, I did see that commercial. Yeah.
It is such an awesome.
Yeah.
I'm really excited about that.
You have to put that in the show notes.
This guy sounds like a far more productive developer than me. He got one pull request in, doing good.
How do we bring more attention to things like this? How do we get companies on board with saying that, you know, this isn't just about doing, say, the right thing to do the right thing, but it's about dollars too. Like you're missing out on a lot here. You're missing out on a lot of people.
There's a lot of angles to it. In certain areas, in Melbourne area, it's government contracting is really big.
Yeah.
If you're doing anything for the government, you have to have accessibility built in. Otherwise, you could be fined. You could penalize, you could lose the contract. So that's one way. The other way of coming at it on the commercial side is you possibly are cutting off 20% of your revenue or your users, et cetera. And then the other side is just getting it into the software engineering part of it so that it's part of your estimations, it's part of your pricing and planning and scheduling, and just building it in that accessibility by default is just how your company works.
Do you think that there'll be a point think about right now, we have, it's always been mobile first, right? Mobile first. And this concept of we design for mobile, we design for desktop, we design for, watch. And does it make sense for companies to start saying, hey, we should design for accessibility where the interface is specifically refactored for accessibility? Is that something that's even possible?
In design for, you have to consider accessibility.
Oh, yeah.
So I had someone come up to me today and he was asking about Ionic and accessibility. And, you know, from that was a challenging, you know, question, because it's like Ionic is web.
Yeah.
So it's using web standards to achieve accessibility. So there's a lot of, and you know, he's asking me about Angular, like what does special Angular do? And it's really, I mean, Angular is built on the web standards. It's not doing accessibility in some strange way, because it has to work with all the screen readers through standards. And then the issue with like Ionic is, okay, so you're using the web standards and building with that, but then you're
putting something else,
building and deploying it onto iOS and Android, which are gonna have a touch screen reader interface, and which are by native are, you know, used to a little bit of a different, you know, standard and whatnot. So I don't really know exactly how that story works, but I got a guy's card and we'll talk about it. But there's some interesting, you know, things you have to think about when you're supporting multiple platforms and the accessibility story on each of them.
But can you actually adapt it though in the same way of like a style sheet, where for instance you can say this is the print style sheet? Is there a way of changing the actual layout? I know screeners have various fancy things where you can jump to like H1s to like quickly, well, headers, so you can jump to different sections of like a form, for instance. But can layouts change based on their knowing that a screen reader is there, so that the view and experience is more.
It's a good question. I, you know, they're still using Firefox or Chrome or something like that. I don't know if there's any kind of an API or user agent or something that, because the screener usually is something that's on top of all that. I don't know if there's a way for the browser to say,
I know
screen reader is active right now.
I should look.
A research topic.
There's a company in Orlando named Lighthouse Works, I believe.
They're out of Orlando?
Yeah. And they design a lot of really great interfaces for like websites that are not accessible, so that their whole purpose is to get people who are, you know, like maybe color blind even, or, you know, visually impaired in any way, shape, or form, able to get jobs. So no matter what that may be, right?
Nice.
So a lot of their developers are also visually impaired, but they make really cool software that goes on top of whatever you're looking at to actually like interface with what's going on. So that's maybe something we can take a look at.
It's a challenging piece, because a lot of the accessibility has to happen in the design phase. And if you're using these really interesting color schemes and you've got this really nice design and you give it to the developers, they just implement it. But if you've got a lot of colors that don't contrast enough, and you have
inputs to be barely visible,
it can be so artistic, but it may not be functionally usable.
Absolutely.
Like, you, there's big news about Beyonce's website lately. Big deal.
Mina Markham trying to get.
But you know, if you're gonna have millions of users on your site,
get on it.
It better be accessible.
Absolutely. Especially like if you want to, you know, get that sound, and like, you know, you want to interact with another community too, right? Like, you don't you don't want to be in your own bubble, no matter what kind of community you're in. So I think definitely what you're trying to, you know, accomplish here by helping others and is, you know, making more space for more community involvement, which is really cool.
Yeah.
So my we're getting close to end. My final question I really like to ask, it's especially complicated with you because you've had you experienced a lot of the other planning of the conference, but there's a great deal of planning that happens with creating a presentation, all the work behind the scenes that occurs, and attendees don't always realize that, you know, sometimes weeks, hours of effort that go into a presentation. I'd like to know a little bit of behind the scenes of what that's like for you, what you experience building your talk.
I've seen a number of blog posts where people post, you know, this is my process, and they go through, and there's like, worrying and sweating and procrastinating and then cramming and they figure out what works for them. I don't really have like a full on like creative process that I go through every time, but certainly I find, I want to get my head around the content. I want to understand it. And I spend most of my time like digging into the code, digging into demos, examples. And so I'm not writing my slides, but I'm getting to the point where I really understand it. So when it comes to writing the slides, that part's pretty easy. And then I have to just think, what parts of this are relevant to the audience? What will they care about? What gives value to them? And then I can go through the slides and I can start to break it up. And I come up with like a story, like how we're going to get through this. What is the flow? And then I do the slides. And then one thing I always do if I have time is putting in speaker notes, not to necessarily just sit there and read, but
guidance.
Sometimes I didn't today, but sometimes if you only have 4 hours of sleep, like I got today, sometimes you'll get a brain fart. And you just start looking at the audience like,
what was I talking? Where am I again?
So that is a horrible feeling. But if you have speaker notes, even if you don't use them the entire presentation until that point, you look down, boom, there's a sentence for you to read. So like your brain goes blank,
but you read sentence.
You're right back on track. You're flowing again. You're right in it. And it just happens sometimes. You're lucky if you can get out there and just flow through your whole presentation without a hiccup. But
that's a good tip.
And it also helps you just writing the speaker notes. It's like a rehearsal, and then reading through them right before your talk is another like rehearsal. So that ideally you don't have to use them at all in your talk, but just the process of writing them I think is really helpful.
How technical are you with your slides? Do you have do you do it in Google, or do you have an Angular app that you've built?
No, I don't mess around with like the web slide frameworks right now. Do Google Docs or Google Slides. And I try, and this is one thing, like I share my slides. I tell people, like when I tweet it usually, that look at the speaker notes, because I try, my slides have something interesting, maybe one or two bullets, but I try not to keep too much content in the slides.
Because
it gets distracting and overwhelming to people.
It's supposed to supplement what you're saying.
So a lot of the content and the good stuff is in the speaker notes, what I say. So if you just look at the slides, you don't look at the speaker notes, you miss a lot of the important, like, oh, here is a discovery, or here is like the key point of the slide. It's not here's the key point written there. It's in the speaker notes.
Yeah, there's a picture of a turtle. Okay.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, I get that a lot. Like, there's a number of slides I've looked at over the years where I look at them, I get that same experience where I'm like, okay, it says you use blah, blah, blah. And it's like, all right, next slide. Nothing else that tells me. What are they talking about? Yeah, that's awesome. You include the notes in there.
I don't PDF, you lose all the speaker notes.
Oh, really?
I usually just share my Google Slides and then I give everyone comment permission.
Yeah.
So people want to like have comments? A conversation about it, or they want to like tweak something.
Do you get that?
I do some, not a lot. I think some people are scared.
Do you hear that? Get on his slides, leave
lots of comments. Yes. You can ask questions. I'll be happy to respond.
Well, Michael, we're at the end. How can people get in touch with you? What's the best way? What's the best way people can get in touch with you?
Twitter works well. It's at SplackTar. And then also on other social media networks, but that one works. I'm also on GitHub, the same handle. Find me in repos.
All right, great. We'll put a link in the show notes. Well, thank you so much for being on the show.
Yes. Thank
really
you very
appreciate
much.
It. Thanks, thank everybody, so for watching, and we'll have a little bit more coming up. Thanks, guys. Thanks for consuming the Thunder Nerds. We honestly and sincerely appreciate you watching and or listening to the show. Please subscribe on YouTube and iTunes. Write us a review, kick a few stars our way. And above all else, please remember to send your favorite book suggestions to Brian Hinton.
I like romance novels. They have happy endings.
I should have known the Territor didn't mean us any harm when the Sword of Omens didn't obey me. And anyway, it was just plain stupid to assume it might be bad. Just what the fuck am I talking about?